to the Mop Show. I'm Mason on Business Startups. Q here. This is how I do things. Big ideas for small budgets. Let's get to it.
Hey, what's happening, guys? It's the Mop Show. Just gonna knock in a little podcast for the weekend. About to go for dinner in out in Koh Phangan. We're over in a place called Santia Beach Resort. Very nice place. It's like Hawaii, but not Hawaii, which is good because I always want to go to Hawaii. So technically, I'm in Hawaii. If I think it is, it is what it is. One of the things I want to talk about actually is I did a podcast recently on sacking a supplier. It's actually quite a liberating experience. We did one a while back. Won't name them who they are. It's about 3 or 4 years ago actually, and they were just assholes. They took it for granted that we would want their products. They took it for granted that we need them more than they need us, which is crazy because you have a product. One of the easiest things in business is coming up with an idea. Anyone come up with an idea. It doesn't have to be a good idea, but you can come up with an idea. Executing an idea is a darn sight harder. Executing that idea effectively and actually making it profitable or affecting change and doing something wonderful or creating jobs and, you know, treasury revenue or whatever is even harder still. So there's a whole sort of chain of things to do. Coming up with an idea and then making a product, particularly, so we're in the e-liquid, we're in the vaping business, so e-liquid isn't the most... It's not hard to make an e-liquid. It's hard to make a great e-liquid. I'm sure it's the same three said for wine and for beer. It's not hard to make beer. It's patience and time. It's hard to make a nice beer, or it's harder to make a nice beer, and the raw materials required are more expensive to make better quality ones. I was speaking to a good friend of mine recently, Steve, actually. He makes boutique e-liquids and uses some very unique sourced flavourings rather than the generic mass market stuff that big firms use. But anyway, I'm digressing. Anyway, so the particular supplier was very rude, very obnoxious, would often not have the product in for us, and we'd get our customers would go online and buy from there, so they'd still keep stock to fulfill their online orders, and we would lose the business, and we'd lose the customers, because then they'd start buying from their website. So it wasn't a great relationship, and I kind of we didn't get very far, and he was very abrasive to us, and we got rid of him. And I thought, you know what, I pay rent, rates, wages, staff training, HR, all the things we do. I built up a customer base, or I built some kind of brand loyalty to shop with us, and you don't get to have that for nothing. And it's why big supermarkets, for example, like Asda, they want a minimum of 78-80% margin if you will stock with them. A lot of them will charge you to list in their shops, and you have to present them with a marketing strategy, a marketing plan. It's not easy. You don't just go in there with a product and enter in. Someone asked Camilla Ainsworth, the girl who comes second on The Apprentice this year, on her Ask Me a Question about business. She's pushing the whole female entrepreneur thing. And she's got her milk product, or milk, or however it's said. And someone said, oh, how do you get a product in a shop? And she kind of glossed over the question. But they asked her how you get a product in a shop. Well, the reality was is she'd got her products, she was selling them herself. And then she got on The Apprentice, and they'd seen her brand through the finals. So that's how she got a product in the shop. So she didn't really have a great deal of knowledge, actually, to help people get them in shops. But the truth is, if you're anyone else out there in the world, the truth is you're going to have to invest a significant sum of money to benefit from someone else's customer base. That's the truth. It just doesn't work how The Apprentice might make you believe it is. If you can hear a loud pinging noise in the background, it appears to be some kind of fire alarm going off. I hope it's a fire alarm and nothing else. But the reality is it's not easy to get your products in a supermarket or any major brand, because if you want to leverage their customer base that they've worked hard, invested heavily to build, you're going to have to make some significant investment yourself. So that's the pleasure sometimes of binning off a supplier. And if you're spending a lot of time with that supplier, dealing with them, they're stressing you out, and they're detracting from your ability to actually grow your business in other ways, potentially even stopping you from creating your own product because you're too busy dealing with the supply chain of them, and it's costing staff wages to deal with it, you'll think, actually, the margins you're getting are actually smaller. And this is what business is all about. Business is about leveraging time. Effect, essentially, is leveraging time with service in exchange for money. And so you may sell Facebook leverage data, and they leverage that off against the costs of infrastructure and server and hosting and paying their web devs and their hackers and their, you know, whatever else they have within their ether out there to build a brand. And then they leverage that data that they acquire through that long tail process and sell it for advertising revenue. If you are a personal trainer, you leverage your time and your knowledge in exchange for some money. And if someone lets you down, doesn't turn up for that event, and you've given up that slot of time in your day, you've sold your time, but for nothing, and you get nothing in return. So that's how business works. Business is all about essentially going, how can I arbitrage that time? How can I leverage that time? How can I leverage those people's time? And if you run a business and you employ people, you're essentially leveraging their time. So if you have a shop and you have staff working in those stores, you're leveraging their time. You're offering them money now because you believe that by having their time, you could potentially have a shop open that someone could walk in through the door and maybe buy a product that you've invested in and put on the shelves there. And then obviously you have different degrees of that. So you have much more experienced salespeople, much higher performing salespeople. And you could just go, okay, well, we'll just have anyone in there. We'll have someone who can't even speak in there, who can't communicate the product and not understand the products. And you'd potentially pay that person less money. Or you can go, hey, do you know what? I'm going to engage you and reward you and incentivize you by selling products and using your knowledge and achieving things in the stores, and I'll pay more money and share some of those profits because I want to get a bigger business and a better business. So that's how it all works, okay? And so if we have suppliers who are detracting from the time that we can spend investing in our business or growing in our business or thinking about our business, because your time is very valuable if you run a business, you want to use your time to work on the business, not just in the business. Why am I doing the podcast? I'm working on the business in a very long tail way. One of my long tail is I believe that if I build myself a podcast that gets followers, I can discuss my business to other people who might not otherwise have come across it, and I can grow a brand that way as well. So I'm working on the business, but in a very, very sort of almost a distant kind of manner. Now let's talk about customers. It's just, this is the unspoken truth, isn't it? That, could you sack a customer? Could I, who runs a retail business, even talk about the idea of sacking a customer? And it's also a dangerous thing because you can very often get into the habit of becoming a blame someone else culture. And I always talk about accountability and ownership. I think that's very, very important. If you run a business and you have a customer complaint, do I blame the staff member? Obviously, look, we all have responsibilities in a business, but ultimately, I've got one at the moment, for example, I'm dealing with, and the reality is we could have probably just been a bit blunter of a particular person. You're always going to have a clash sometimes of personalities, potentially. But this particular person, we could have dealt with them, and I should train my staff to know this better, dealt with it better in the early incidents. Explain the situation, actually. The chap's come into the shop, he's bought a product. It's quite a specific, unique product as well. It's someone's clearly into their products within the world of this sort of vaping industry. And he's had buyer's remorse the next day. And rather than coming, and because, imagine like pants and socks, there's certain things you can't return back to a shop. Underwear, you can't return back to a shop because of hygiene reasons. Well, vaping devices have the hygiene element to them, and they also have perishable parts to them. So it's very hard to take an exact return, because if you get it, you're going to have probably used it. It's like getting a car, is it, and then changing your mind the next day once you've driven a few miles. You're not going to get back. You're going to lose money on that, because that's just the nature of it. Now, and it's a tough thing to deal with, and what sometimes people won't necessarily get is if they just change their mind, but they've used it, they didn't like big enough cloud or some kind of subjective notion. And it can be frustrating to this industry, but I'm sure every industry has these. If it's some subjective, or maybe you sell cake, someone's gone, it wasn't as rich and as velvety as you said in the menu. It's red velvet cake. Doesn't mean it tastes of velvet. It wasn't velvety enough to me. And it's like, well, are you asking for your money back because it wasn't velvety enough? It's subjective. What if it was sufficiently velvety according to the laws of velvet? It's hard. So you do get these things in business. And you spend a lot of time dealing with them, and it ends up, or can end up dealing with sort of a negative, or you just go, look, I'm going to take a hit on it. You're taking a financial loss on this, though. And with vaping products, you could essentially take a loss. Now, we kind of got a solution now. What we do is we say, look, if you just change your mind, because our requirement as a retailer is to make sure our product is fit for sale. So we're providing it's fit for sale, we fix it, repair it, and we're pretty good. We'll keep helping them. I always get annoyed if I hear in the stores they turn someone away for a repair, after only a couple of months or so, because I'm saying, guys, look, is this, if I bought this and it broke me in 5 months' time, I'd be annoyed too. So, and I always try and keep those same policies of what would annoy me. That's how I keep my business. But so this particular case was, there was nothing wrong with the device. The story was, it's not working, it's leaking, it's all this. So we went to all these efforts to try and fix it for the customer. And, it was kind of, well, we were throwing away coils, these are little replacement parts, and to try and make it, have a new one, have a fresh one to see, show you it's definitely working. It started to cost us quite a lot of money, really. In fact, we threw in a free liquid to try and placate him. And by the end of it, when you think of the time involved, and the fact that I'm even talking about this now, although it is a learning experience, we actually made no money on the product because of the wages of the person involved, the time and the number of people involved. That's a cost. So essentially, in order to deal with a customer who, if we give an amazing service, doesn't seem like he's ever going to have given us word of mouth, because he won't be giving us word. If we make him happier, than he currently is now, we are still not going to get positive word of mouth. So there is no kind of word of mouth advertising. Now, it's very hard to start making decisions like that of what you think, who you think is going to give you good word of mouth, because it could become a recipe for failure. But in this particular situation, the customer come up with a lot of different things of, oh, you know, it's not working, so we can fix, there you go, it's working. Oh, you have to give me a refund. No, you don't. Trading standards doesn't imply you have to give you a refund. Now, we do give people refunds on occasion, providing they're polite to us. Because if they're super nice, we want to go out of our way to help them. What I'm talking about is give refunds if they've used a device. If they've used a product, if they've bought a product, they've used it and they've changed their mind. Often what we'll do is we'll go, look, if you're happy to pay for the restocking of it, putting a fresh coil in there, we'll give you a credit note and you can go and get something else in the shop. I want to make you happy. I want you to have a product you can happy. And if the product is in very good resellable condition, as if it was brand new, as if you'd be happy to buy it in the shop, then look, fine, let's see what we can do for you. And 99% of the time, of the very small number of cases that get like this, that's happy, that's fine for most people. In this particular case, had the gentleman come in and said this in the first place, look, I feel a bit of an idiot. It's just not for me. Is there anything that can be done? I understand you're potentially going to lose money on this because you might not be able to resell it. How can I help you to get around that? Had he been like that, had he been up front, we wouldn't have done this whole charade where we spent ages trying to fix a product that wasn't broken. Now he's got to put a negative review on our Facebook going, oh, I wouldn't recommend them, they're thieves, they're liars, and it's, you know, we can evidence all these things. And it's unfortunate because it means you get a bad rep for doing nothing wrong. Reality. I wouldn't have got to 30 stores if I spent my time being a liar or, you know, a thief in business, because you just don't get word of mouth. But this is when you start looking at these people and think, do you know what? This is not a customer. This is someone who is an oxygen thief. This is a person who essentially is costing us more than they're ever going to add to us. I want to have amazingly happy customers because I believe that's the best marketing we can have. But if someone's only time they've ever come onto your social media was to write a negative comment, they're never going to be someone that's going to give you good word of mouth. So all you can do is sometimes, in these cases, call them up on them. And you'll see people getting quite famous now. They'll post replies on things on the TripAdvisor if they can evidence it's bang wrong. And I think there's kind of a move now to call out people when they do put these posts on. Now, the point of this podcast is I want to say to you, don't be afraid to sack a customer. Oh, shock. You run a retail business. This doesn't sound good. But it's true. If someone comes into your store, has never bought from your store before, demands a return of money, even though they've used a product that you can't resell, has never shopped with you before, has no previous buying experience, and they actually, for example, ours is vaping, so if they suddenly went, no, I don't want that kit anymore, I want my money back, I'm going, right? That means they're either going to go to smoking, are they? So they're going against their entire reason of why they come in the store. They're not a customer. They're someone who's just cost us money. That's not a customer. If they've never shopped with us before and they want their money back and they don't want a kit, they want to replace it with anything, then they're never going to be a customer, not for a bloody long time. And they're not going to go around saying, oh, that's really good, they settled it for me, gave me my money back, and I decided to go back to smoking. They're not going to advertise that, are they? So they're not a customer. They are effectively a nuisance, an annoyance. And so sometimes you have to be firm but fair and think, do you know what? I'm going to get a bad rep anyway. I'm probably going to get a bad review. You've got people like this who are never going to shop with you again. They're not essentially a customer. And they'll use the phrase, oh, customer's always right. It's like, well, you're not a customer. Now, you wouldn't necessarily say that in front of other people, nor would you reply that in a way that other people can potentially see and use that against you. But don't be afraid if sometimes you've got to be flat firm and say, you know what, look, I'm going to follow the rules 100% in accordance with the laws that are there for you, your consumer protection laws. So if it's a case of repairing and fixing a faulty product, I'm going to get it done for you. That's done for you now, so we can agree that's done. Am I going to give you a cash return, when you've used a product, the packaging's in a terrible state, I can't do anything and I'm going to lose out of money, and you're not offering me a win solution in this either? That's not a customer to me. So I'm sorry, I've done what you've asked me to do when you bought the product. So this is it. So you're going to get customers people who claim, oh, a customer's always right. And is a customer always right? No, they're not always right. Now, do you want to get a list or a litany of negative reviews when you could have just comped someone a fiver or a tenner and just worn it on the chin? And say that's not get a bad review, but are you even getting a good review? You probably won't be. So you have to make a decision. You know, if it happens regularly, you've got to see what's going on in your sales process. You've got to see why people are being given the wrong advice, why people aren't being pre-warned these things. And certainly when you get these situations, you use them as a learning lesson. You go, okay, hang on, how can we avoid this next time? Can we capture this? Can we start? So I'm now going to go to the guys, when someone comes in, and they have these issues, like this. Have a chat with them when you can spot them, because you can generally spot them. The chap was particularly aggressive in the store anyway. If these things happen, we'll now put it into the training. And so it's a learning lesson for us. And we'll say, look, there isn't actually anything wrong with this device, but look, between you and me, I've got some flexibility, and you can put anything, you can train your sales staff to say this. Obviously, you've got to evidence these things on the end of their sale, so you know the staff aren't taking an easy way out. But you say, look, I've got a bit of latitude. All I'm asking you to do is just speak to me like a human being. This is my job. You know, it's not my thing that's going to go on my tombstone. I'm trying to help you, but I don't have to help you above and beyond, and I certainly don't have to help you in addition. That's going to put me in an awkward situation with my bosses. But look, If I can help you, can you just be up front with me, just so I don't spend any more time wasting on this with, you know, is it broken, is it faulty? Have you just changed your mind? And if you change your tone and how you speak to people, you'd be surprised how you can get a whole new answer. It's not going to work all the time. But then again, we're talking about the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. So you're giving yourself an opportunity to stem off a few more of these bad people and say, look, is it just change your mind? These things happen. Obviously, it costs us money, and that's why we kind of have all these processes in place. But we might have a workaround. I just need to. I just if you could just be honest with me, and if he's still being shitty about it, and still or she's still being shitty about it, what can you do? Well, you tried that angle, and that would potentially have solved stress, because this is what we're trying to get to: is about efficiency of time. If a customer or a person in your store is absorbing way more time than the actual margin of that product sold gives you, they're creating more grief, more marketing headache, more customer services headache than that product or those sales you're going to get from them are ever going to give you. Sometimes it's fine to call a dickhead. Stand your ground and say, look, in this case, I'm not willing to budge further on this. We try and help everyone in every way, providing they're polite to us or just give us the modicum of respect. You didn't offer us that. And in fact, we spent so much time on this, we're considerably out of pocket. I mean, you probably might not even want to go into all that level of conversation, but the key thing is it okay if a customer or person takes up so much more of your time than you get any financial benefit within your business to say to them, I don't know if we can serve you anymore? Because those people generally, they carry a lot of problems. And you see them, we had one a number of years back, used to come into our shop, and she'd, it wasn't working, so we'd give her a freebie to fix something. And then she'd try and bring that one in to return it. She'd try and bring freebies in to get cash back off things. And she was trying to get money out of something that I'd given her for free. So I said, look, what's the reason? She was like, I think I might have an allergy. I said, in that case then, if you have allergies, I tell you what, I don't want to do anything that, you know, we're not allowed to by law and medical science, and I'm not a medical expert, as you can imagine. I'm no longer going to be able to sell to you anymore any products, given what you've just told me. I would love to, but, you know, you mentioned those allergies, and I don't want to hurt you in any way or cause any harm for you, so I'd rather be responsible. I'm sure you might go elsewhere to buy these products, but those allergies do concern me. Basically, I did it because I knew she was a deceitful troll, and she was eating so much of our time, was always causing scenes and stress in front of other customers, and I just thought, you know what? While it is counterintuitive to run a business by palming people off and not fixing things, you can't sail a boat through concrete. At the end of the day, you can't sail a boat through concrete. It's not always fixable. So by doing that, freed up my staff's time, made staff members happier, not having to deal with her, caused us less inconvenience and embarrassment in front of other customers. So it actually had a more positive effect that has a financial value. So by getting rid of a customer, by sacking a customer, actually gave us a financial benefit or a tangible benefit that could be financially quantified. And this is the same with, sometimes you're going to get some bad reviews. You should always work to deal with all of them. And if there's a pattern of the same problem keep forming every single time, then you've got a problem in your own business's systems. So that's what good thing about complaints are. 99.9% of complaints add value because we fix the problem that causes that thing. But on those occasions, you're going to get some who aren't a straight shooter and who are going to cause you problems every single time you deal with them and consume so much time, so much energy, create so much negativity. And providing they are the exception on your reviews pages, take one for the team sometimes and tell it like it is. We can't do business anymore. We've offered you the full extent of what we can do. We're there to help you. We spent our time trying to help you, but you didn't show us the courtesy or respect to our members of staff who are only there to work and move on. Once you deprive them the opportunity of there ever being any comeback as well, you actually get the opportunity potentially of even getting rid of that negative review in the long term, because you've made the leap. You've taken that jump. They don't think you're doing. They think you'll do anything to service them. They think you'll do anything to capture a customer. And more often than not, we will in business. But providing you do have that attitude in business, you can afford to take some bumps and scrapes and sack a few bad ones. Got to kiss a couple of frogs to get a prince. That's what they say. Anyway, so there you go. Is it okay to sack a customer every now and then? Damn straight it is. Have a good weekend. That's The Mob Show.
Thanks for listening to today's show. Check us out online, themobshow.com. Check us on Twitter, the_mobshow. Always chucking out bits of advice there. And follow our journey of setting up a CBD shop in the cannabis space. Instagram @localCBDshop. Or you can find ourselves on Instagram, the_mobshow.